Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Clean Energy View Radio Show. Our podcasts are available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.cleanenergyview.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at info@cleanenergyview.com. Today, my guest is Professor Morten Albeck, and we're going to be talking about the future of wind energy. Wind energy is an abundant renewable energy that has many advantages, making it an ideal resource for both large-scale and small-scale applications. As with other forms of renewable energy, it has a huge economic potential, but is still improving and becoming more economical as the technology evolves. Vestas Wind Systems is one of the key global players in wind energy that is doing great things. That is primarily because of a true visionary named Morten Albeck. Mr. Albeck is an author, philosopher, and has also been listed on the first Zeronaut 50 Roll of Honor by John Elkington, who describes the Zeronauts as a new breed of innovators operating at the leading edges of tomorrow's economy. So I would first like to welcome to the show my co-host, Luis Mejia. Good afternoon, Luis.
Good afternoon, June. Good afternoon, Dr. Albeck.
And I would like to welcome Dr. Morten Albeck. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Can you please tell our audience about yourself and what made you decide to work for Vestas?
The reason for me choosing to work for Vestas actually has something to do with that my dad died in the summer of 2008. At that time, he was 64 and I was 32. So that meant that if I was going to live as long or as short as him, that I had more or less precise half of my life left. At that time, I had been working for quite some time in the banking industry and had been fortunate to have a pretty successful career in that industry. But as I sat down to reevaluate what I wanted to use my life on and also my potential and my talent on, it became pretty obvious that I would like to see if I could become a part of an industry and a corporation that had the possibility of positively impacting the planet and future generations. And as soon as I had made that decision, it was pretty clear that there was not too many options. Neither on a global scale, but especially as you are Dane, the choice was that I had to work for Vestas. And then a set of coincidences happened shortly after, and then I met up with the CEO of Vestas, and we seemed to click immediately. And then I started the 1st of January 2009.
Wow. So prior to your work at Vestas, can you just talk about, or if you care to elaborate a little bit more about your background? Because I think that you have a very interesting path which led you to Vestas that I think is important, especially for our audience to identify with.
I have quite an untraditional background for a corporate leader since I'm my academic background is philosophy and history. And especially philosophy has been something that I have been very attached to and used a lot of my spare time on, and still do. I have an honorary professorship in philosophy at university in Denmark. So I have been occupied with philosophical complex questions such as, why is the youth so unengaged, at least you could say a part of it, in the biggest questions that we have. And now I'm talking about my own generation. I made an analysis of my own generation, the generation that is born shortly after the end of the Vietnam War and before the fall of the Berlin Wall. I call this generation fucked up, because I actually do believe that us, that is between 30 and 40, seems to be the missed generation. We had a lot of privileges, a lot of opportunities, became extremely well-educated. We grew up in a pretty secure environment, but even though we seem to be passive in our willingness to go in and transform society, both the local society and the global society as such. So my work in the corporate environment has also been very, very much tied to philosophical questions, such as how do we ensure that we create a more enlightened and engaged future generation? And one of the things that I firmly believe that we need to accept and confront is that on the one side, human beings, I do believe, is not born like smoked devils. They are born warm-hearted and with sensibility. And the whole project is to activate that sensibility to ensure that they also have, what should I say, take intelligent choices and have a sustainable behavior. Because just now, if you look on the whole climate change issue and challenge, let's just agree that 97% of all experts is of the opinion it's created by human beings. So that means that there is a vast majority of human beings on the planet, also among the absolutely most well-educated, also among the absolutely most privileged individuals that continue to have a behavior every day that is actually ruining the planet the future generations are going to live on. And that is a philosophical mystery that we need to find also a philosophical answer to.
I think it's very interesting that you have the philosophical background, because the truth of the matter is that we need philosophers. I think society is so accustomed to being subjected to the manufactured content and opinions that are basically pushed on them, and it's just easier to conform than to actually sit there and think and consider what are the steps that we need to take to really make something happen. I mean, it's one thing to dream about something. It's another to actually walk the talk. And I think that's something that you've clearly demonstrated. And especially, it was just great to interview John Elkington a few weeks ago, and we did mention you. And just looking at the things that you're doing, I think you're really helping people to really connect with the people that they need to look to and the companies, and also just the direction that we need to take as a collective group, if you will, in order to make the changes that we need happen so that we do have, in fact, a sustainable future.
No, but I very, very much agree that we can create a sustainable future, and we can also create it much faster than many people is willing to accept. And for me, it's all about, as I also said, it's all about that we enlighten people to make the right choices. Let me give a very, very concrete example. I'm absolutely sure, and furthermore also statistics prove me right, that if the consumers, and it doesn't matter whether it's in India or in the United States or in China or in Europe, that if they go down into the supermarket and they have the choice between a packet of cereals, which is oil-made and wind-made, the vast majority will choose the one which is wind-made, because they do know intuitively that that is what is the best choice for the planet and for future generations. Now, the fact of the matter is that just now consumers do not have that choice. They simply do not have the transparency into what type of energy is used to produce the products that they procure every day. But now envision that very soon they will be given that choice. Then we can see fast change, because I'm absolutely certain that the corporations that are then producing cereals or any other type of products will soon look into what type of energy they're using to producing their products, generating their revenue, generating their EBIT, and they'll find out it's much more sustainable for their future earnings if they start ensuring that they get more renewable energy into their energy mix. So for me, it's all about, as I said, enlightenment, but enlightenment through transparency and through facts. And yet again, as I said, we are born sensible. Human beings are born with a sensibility. We just need to activate it. And if we get it activated, we can see a big change happening fast. And furthermore, we also need to see big change happening fast. Because if not, then I think many of us will take our last breath many years from now with a bad consciousness, because we're leaving something behind which is in a shape which is much, much worse than the one that we woke up and took our first breath in when we were born.
Now, it's very interesting, because if you look at other industries where transparency has become paramount and the demand for transparency is becoming unavoidable, when you look at energy, it only makes sense that this is the direction especially renewable energy has to take, because it seems like it's the last piece of the puzzle. People talk about it, they want to see things happen, but they don't realize, you know, something, it took us quite a bit of time to get where we're at now, and we need to do something. Recently, there was an outage in India where millions of people were without power, and the reality is that that can happen. at any given point in Europe, in America, all over the world. And, I mean, there's some places that deal with that constantly, but here in America, we're very fortunate. We don't have those constant power outages, and should we experience something like that, it could be devastating. Talk about looting, rioting, all sorts of mayhem that can occur that have occurred in the past, and that's something that could very well be part of the present as well as the future. So we really need to look to the future as far as what we're going to do to get this to move forward. And I think transparency issue is that's really spot on.
I would also say that I concur very much that as the global population will reach 9 billion by 2015, which actually means that over the coming years there'll be as many people added to the world's population that lived in the whole world at the time of World War I, to just put things into perspective. And these people will, of course, demand to have a lifestyle that is as high as we see in other parts of the world, i.e. they want to demand to have access to energy. So if we do not get more renewable energy into the energy mix, we'll end up in a devastating situation. And these are just the facts. Now the question is, how do we change the energy mix of the world? Because just now only less than 3% of the energy that is in the grid globally is wind energy. And the vast majority still is fossil fuel. It's coal, it's nuclear, it's gas, even though the gas is better than coal and oil. The renewable energy is still a very, very small percentage. And for me, I'm absolutely sure that, of course, you should look to the political system and ask them to encourage. But in the end of the day, the ones that can actually make the political system move faster and take, you could say, the right decisions faster, it is the citizens. It is each and every one of us that needs to understand the responsibility that we carry, especially if you're a member of the privileged, well-educated middle class in the world. I actually do think that community, more than anybody, has a special obligation to be advocates for changing the energy mix, because being so resourceful, both economically, intellectually, and socially, and then not caring for the future is for me perhaps one of the most uncharming characteristics I can find about any person.
And it's interesting because with the, I hate to sound so cliche, but the, quote, conscious consumers, these are the things that they're looking for. And it's not just something to, I guess, entice the consumers to purchase products, but the truth of the matter is with manufacturers and other businesses, they're looking to see how better they can accommodate their customers, because customer loyalty is really, really important. And as everybody knows, it takes twice the amount of energy, effort, and money to get a new customer than it does to keep the existing one loyal. And these are the things that the businesses are looking for in order to keep those customers loyal, as well as just expanding upon their current value propositions. Now, at this point, could you talk about WindMade, how it came about, and can you go into detail, what was going on in your corporate office as far as just the whole evolution of it?
Yes, I would be delighted to. Now, as I COP15, which is the annual, you could say, summit where world leaders meet different places in the world, and they've done so since Kyoto, to discuss how we fight climate change and reduce CO2 emissions. In 2009, COP15, that summit was held in Copenhagen. And that was the same year as I arrived to Vestas. And we had high hopes that the world leaders would meet and that they would make the right decisions and commit to truly, truly change the energy mix of the world so we could fight climate change and ensure that the temperature increases wouldn't go above the 2 degrees that is so extremely important for future generations and the planet. Now, as I presume that you know, the conclusion was not that positive. Actually, the world leaders deposit without any commitments of any kind, and more or less ever since, the planet has been left to its own. Now, with that devastating conclusion, we could, of course, have just leaned back and said the politicians are also immoral and they're not willing to obligate themselves and cry for many, many days. But we chose something differently, namely to look into how we could actually make sure that we created a global movement that in the end of the day would force positively meant the politicians to make the right and responsible decisions. And then I was actually sitting at an airplane from Copenhagen to Beijing and reading the in-flight magazine of the company, the airplane company that I was flying with. And I could see that they were sponsoring Save the Children. And then it struck me that imagine if this company actually back in the 1940s had gotten the idea to establish an NGO called Save the Children. Imagine if a corporation actually invented and took initiative to establish a non-profit organization with such a meaningful purpose. So far, all global NGOs as well as global trust marks or consumer labels have been initiated by civil society. But why should it be like that? If you're a truly, truly responsible company, if you're truly, truly a corporate citizen, why shouldn't you then truly act as a citizen, as a member of civil society? And then the idea to Winmate came to mind, namely that we investors wanted to be the first corporation in the world to take the initiative to establishing an NGO that was organized around a consumer label, Winmate, that would make it transparent to consumers no matter where in the world what type of energy was used to produce a product that they procure every day. And thus we embarked, and then November last year, Winmate went live. And now it's an independent NGO. We have handed it back to civil society. We have no rights and no influence on it. And it lives its own life, and it lives pretty well. Now with close to 100 corporate members in 17 different countries. And the first Winmate products will go on the shelf this year. So that's been a poetic and beautiful journey to be a part of.
Oh, of course. Now, when it comes to the energy sector itself, how has this helped the different companies that are producing wind energy?
Now, it so far, I would say that it hasn't helped too much, but it's also only existed for, as I said, since November 2011 until now. So it's also about being patient. You could compare it to the consumer labels that is pretty much known by everyone, like Fair Trade or Not Tested on Animals or PM Free, etc. And Winmate, well, over time, as it gets out into the supermarkets of the world or any retail store, and the consumers will start choosing Winmate products instead of, you could say, the products that choose not to disclose whether they actually produced in a way that is saving the planet or ruining it, then it will logically inspire and motivate the corporations to change the energy mix. And now, do I know that the consumers would actually prefer products produced with wind energy or with renewable energy? Yes, I do know. 50% of the world's consumers is actually willing to pay a premium for products that are made with wind energy. And if we take the States, more than 70% of the consumers would prefer companies that is primarily basing the business model on renewable energy. So as soon as it gets transparent who is actually willing to be transparent and who is not, then it will benefit those that dare, and it will hurt those
that try to keep the truth hidden or a secret. And then, of course, in the end of the day, then that will then create a larger demand for wind energy. And as the demand for wind energy increases, then the marketplace for Vestas increases. And then, yet again, if we are commercially competitive, then we will get a bigger revenue and higher earnings and can invest even more into sophisticating the wind technology and spreading it even to many more corners of the world than we've already done. So for me, WindMate is an example of what I call capitalistic humanism. It is it's something that is intended to, at the same time, be as commercially effective and viable as humanly possible, but at the same time being capable of impacting the planet in a positive way. And I can't see why any corporation shouldn't try to have a capitalistic, humanistic approach to the business model.
But Dr. Albert, this is Luis Mejia. Today, most of wind energy is there, at least in the United States, and I think in Europe as well. There are significant subsidies, that allow companies to actually operate. I think General Electric here in the United States, without the subsidies from the government, I don't think their wind operations or their wind technology or that investment would actually be profitable or make sense. Yep. And I'm fully aware that all technologies, and I think especially green energy or renewables, we're still in some very, very early stages of getting them to be, should I say, competitive or economic. How do you see the future or the involvement or less involvement of government in terms of trying to make the green energy more competitive?
Now, you are right that renewable energy and wind energy gets state subsidies in many, many countries around the world, and that is for sure important for the wind industry to get these subsidies. But just a couple of reflections upon that, which I don't think is known by too many. Globally, there is given more than $450 billion in subsidies to fossil fuel. $450 billion in subsidies. There's only given $60 billion to wind energy. It's just to put it into perspective. Now, if you choose to remove all the subsidies to fossil fuel, then I can guarantee you that wind energy would be extremely competitive against, if not all, then most of the fossil fuels. Then another thing is that the best wind farms in the world already produce power as economically as coal, gas, and nuclear generators.
Correct.
And if you don't believe me, and if you don't believe Vestas, then I hope that you believe Bloomberg New Energy Finance that have stated that the average wind farm will be fully competitive by 2016. So I'm not saying that the subsidies are not important. I'm actually saying rather the opposite. I said without the subsidies, it would have been impossible to mature wind energy and that technology so fast that it's actually now getting close to very, very, very soon to be competitive or even more competitive than most fossil fuels, more or less in all corners of the world. And that is the true breakthrough. But it's not as if that wind energy will not be competitive with coal or with oil before 2015. It's going to happen much, much faster.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, the fossil fuel production is significantly, by exponentially, higher than any of the green energy today. So that would have to, that sector, the green energy, the wind energy and solar, photovoltaic, would have to really expand significantly to start replacing and to be competitively priced with fossil fuels such as oil and coal and even natural gas.
No, but you're absolutely right in the facts that two things. Firstly, that wind, we can't have a world that is 100% based on renewable energy, at least not short term. It would simply be impossible. The grid is not structured in a way where that is capable. But there is room for much more wind energy and renewable energy in the grid than we have today. As I mentioned, just 3%, less than 3% globally is coming from wind, and most actually do agree that the technology is mature enough and actually also competitive enough very soon to cover up to 20% of it. Now, to make that happen, of course, you need to make it attractive to invest in wind energy. And now I'm saying that wind energy do not ask for more subsidies. We're actually just asking that you remove the subsidies to fossil fuel. I simply need to understand the philosophical, logical reason for why you should continue to invest government's money in energy sources and technologies that is hundreds of years old.
Right, but we're still comparing a bit of apples, as they say, apples to oranges here, because you have very mature technologies in the fossil fuel. And even though, as you're saying, that wind and solar may be fairly well advanced, I think we still need to make some significant changes in how we get to the point of having much larger use of green energy rather than fossil fuel, and that's going to take time, as you said.
No, but it will take time. And now, when we talk about fossil fuel, then I would say gas is much, much better than oil and coal, and of course,
sure.
an energy mix which has more natural gas and has more renewable energy is what the planet needs short term. And I'm just saying it again, time is of urgency here. And furthermore, the technologies also, it goes for wind and it goes for solar. They're maturing with a speed that means that we don't need to look, as I said, it's not as if it's going to take 20 years before that these renewable energy sources, wind and solar, is competitive with fossil fuel. As I said, already in certain places, such as New Zealand, wind is economically more viable than coal and oil, simply because the wind is blowing so extremely, extremely well, and the technology has matured. So, just one point here. And sorry to be so engaged, but just to show the absurdity and the reason why I actually do believe that we could have much more renewable energy in the grid, and also need to have it, is that in we've been talking about fighting climate change now since Kyoto, but in 2009, we broke a world record in the history of mankind, and that is that we have never, ever emitted more CO2, namely 3.6 gigatons, which is a 5% jump from 2008, which were the world record until then. So the fact of the matter is that even though that we are talking, and that now that brings me back to the philosophical paradox, we're talking about what the planet needs, what future generations need. We have technologies that are progressing with a speed that's amazing because dedicated people around the world is using all the intellectual capacity just to sophisticate the technology of wind and the technology of solar and so on and so forth. And at the same time, we seem to become more and more attached to fossil fuel. At least the emissions indicate that we're only talking and not acting. And here, I have a stronger belief in the citizens, in the citizens and the consumers of the world. They can actually see, they can actually feel, they can actually understand that this paradox is something they need to act on. And then we just need to enable them to become a part of the solution by them celebrating the brands, the corporations, the products that is changing the energy mix, and for them also to punish those corporations that continue to earn their money and ruin the planet at the same time.
Well, I think from the consumer perspective, you know, people understand, especially if it's presented to them in the form of a label, if they're seeing it when they're actually making a purchase, those dollars, as they say here in the States, count as votes. So every time that you make the purchase for the product that is environmentally responsible, it reinforces the whole idea that responsibility is something that each and every one of us needs to take. Moving forward, what's next for you, Dr. Elvig?
Now, another challenge that we are confronted with is the fact that 2.3 billion people on the planet is living without any access or very, very limited access to electricity. And those that have very, very limited access to electricity have access to extremely expensive and very, very polluting types of energy. So the next challenge is to find a solution to how we can ensure that the developing world is not forced to make the same mistake as we did in the old world, namely relying primarily on fossil fuel. So how can we bring clean, reliable, renewable energy to the 2.3 billion people on the planet that has no access to energy, thus are missing the one component that you simply need to have access to if you want to create prosperity, both on a human level and on a societal level. So that is the next concept that needs to be developed, and it's in its making.
I completely agree. We definitely have a lot of work ahead of us, and you know, it's once again been a very interesting path to see all the things that have brought us to where we're at now. And just to be able to take a step back and say, okay, well, this is where we need to go, especially coming from someone such as yourself that clearly can connect the dots for us, is really what is very important, especially when it comes to communicating with the public and helping them to understand what is truly needed. We are out of time, but I just want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to come on the show and to talk about the things that you're doing. And I look forward to having you come back sometime in the future to talk about all the wonderful things that you have, that we all have to look forward to.
But I'm so honored to be a part of the program, and I really, really feel privileged that I have the opportunity to speak to you and express my opinions. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Elvig. It's been truly very, very interesting and very informative.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Clean Energy View Radio Show. Have a wonderful afternoon, everyone.